This is Elodie Reed, digital producer for Vermont Public Radio. This podcast has been edited for brevity and clarity.
This is Vermont Edition. I'm Jane Lindholm. On Thursday, the Global Warming Solutions Act was officially passed by the Vermont House with amendments from the Senate approved and sent to Governor Phil Scott's desk. This piece of legislation sets out dramatic emissions reductions targets and takes those targets from something that's a goal but doesn't have the force of law behind it, like our current emissions targets are in our comprehensive energy plan, and it makes them mandatory. If this piece of legislation goes into law, the state will be required to meet these emissions reductions, and if it doesn't, Vermonters can sue the state. So what are the targets? Well, reducing greenhouse gas emissions to 26% below 2005 levels by 2025, and then emissions would need to be 40% below 1990 levels by 2030 and 80% below by 2050. I know those are a lot of numbers, and we're going to get into them in more detail today and break them down so they're a little bit easier to digest than doing it all at once. But for the purposes of introduction, let's just say these are dramatic reductions, and they're going to require significant changes in how we all get around, get our power, and think about our impact on the globe. Governor Phil Scott has signaled that while he broadly supports the goal of significantly reducing greenhouse gas emissions, he does not support the timeline or the threat of litigation that's included in this legislation. Since this bill would affect all of us in one way or another, and frankly, since climate change will continue to affect us whether this bill passes or not, we're going to spend the hour talking about it today. Joining us to talk through what's in the bill are two lawmakers who have deep knowledge. Representative Selena Colburn is a progressive from Burlington who was one of the sponsors of the Global Warming Solutions Act. Representative Colburn, nice to talk with you again.
Thanks so much. It's really great to be here, Jane.
And Representative Felicia Loeffler is a Republican from Enosburg Falls who voted against the bill. Representative Loeffler, it's a pleasure to have you joining us as well today.
Thanks so much for including me, Jane.
Now, before we get to Representative Loeffler's concerns, I'd like to take several minutes here with Representative Colburn and just go through what's actually in the legislation. So we're all starting from a level playing field of understanding what this bill entails. Ooh, everybody's phone is ringing now. What this bill entails, and then we can go through some of the objections to it or how that would work and, you know, what a panel that's convened through this bill would actually do to make sure that we have these targets met. So what the legislature is saying to do and then what is still remains to be decided should this bill get the governor's signature or withstand a veto threat. So Representative Colburn, could you first just describe what it is that you're trying to fix with this bill that our comprehensive energy plan doesn't do or that we're not already doing as Vermonters when it comes to greenhouse gas emissions and climate change?
Sure. We have had actually in Vermont in various forms, whether statutory in our comprehensive energy plan or most recently in the widely appreciated commitment that Governor Scott made to hold to the Paris Climate Accord goals. We've actually had some pretty forward thinking and aggressive goals about carbon emission reductions. The problem is we've had no teeth to meet those goals. So, you know, we continue to kind of throw solutions at the wall year by year in very small incremental ways, but we haven't had a plan that says, look, if these are our goals, what are the steps empirically that we need to take to actually achieve them? And I think, you know, in the last couple of years, we have seen Vermonters tell us again and again, thousands of Vermonters streaming through the state house and the streets of our state telling us it's time for the rubber to meet the road. And that's really what this bill does. So it creates a planning body and process, a climate council that will be chaired by the Secretary of Administration with clear directives for a process to make rules. And the Agency of Natural Resources will use a rulemaking process to do that, to get us on a path to meet these goals. And then along the way, there are many, many checks and balances with the legislature and importantly, I think, with the public, so that we are constantly kind of able to assess the plan that's coming forward and how we will meet these goals. And then the bill does create a very narrow legal remedy for Vermonters if Vermont fails to make good on these promises. So a court can, and I'm sure there will be questions and concerns about that. So I'm happy to go into much greater detail about that provision of the bill when that comes up. But essentially, the court can order Vermont to get back on track with its planning and rulemaking process. And that's about the extent of the legal remedy. But we feel, supporters of the bill feel, it's a really important one and provides some teeth to the bill.
Is that sort of the stick here in that bill to say if this doesn't happen, if the state is not on target, there is that threat of being sued? I mean, is that the purpose of that piece of it?
It absolutely is, but the remedy is really not a financial remedy. You know, the remedy is one of what we call injunctive relief, meaning a court can really order the state of Vermont to go back to its rulemaking process, either because it simply just didn't follow the process or the timeline set out in the bill, or because the process failed to realize the reductions that are set in law, although really for that latter remedy to take effect, it has to be because the rulemaking process failed. So it couldn't be like we just, everybody involved followed the advice of experts, came up with a plan that we had every reason to believe would work, and then failed to meet the goals. That would not really meet the standards in this bill. So it has to be really a failure on the part of the state and the players to move the planning process forward in the way that is outlined here. But there's no damages that anyone can sue for. There's actually quite a lot of provisions in the law to prevent frivolous lawsuits from coming forward. So if a lawsuit is found to be frivolous or just have no basis, the state can actually seek financial remedies from the people who bring the suit forward. So the only fees really that are allowable in this are just basic attorney's fees and reasonable attorney's fees at that. So it's not like, you know, I think when people hear that you can sue the state, there's of course a red flag that goes up that we're talking about, you know, massive amounts of money that that folks can ask the state to outlay, more akin to damages. And that's just not the way this is set up.
I think this will become part of one of the sort of subjects we swirl around in this hour, this idea of a lawsuit. So I appreciate you bringing it up. But before, and I also imagine, Representative Loeffler, you have some thoughts on this, and I very much want to get to them. But just again, to make sure that we understand what it is the bill is designed to do before we understand whether and how people might sue the state for not meeting them. Talk us through those emissions reduction targets, because I mentioned them all in the introduction, but, you know, it's really hard to understand, you know, 50% below 29 by this date. So, Representative Colburn, just sort of walk us through them again slowly.
Sure. And I'll do my best. I don't serve on the Energy and Technology Committee. And so that's the committee that's been deep, deep in really the weeds of these targets. One thing I'll say is they all came from looking at existing commitments the state has made in one way or another. So there's little to nothing here that's just pulled out of thin air. And I think that's really important to note. So it sets us up on a timeline. As you mentioned, 26% reduction from our 2005 greenhouse gas emissions by 2025. And that really, our first target, it's actually shy of some of the targets we've committed to in other ways, but it is consistent with the governor's commitment for the state of Vermont to continue membership in the United States Climate Alliance and to achieve the objectives of the 2016 Paris Agreement. So even though that's a little less aggressive than some of our existing comprehensive energy plan and statutory goals, it actually really came directly from a commitment that the governor made to Vermonters. And then, as you said, we go back to 40% reduction from our 1990 greenhouse gas emissions in 2030. And that comes from the state's comprehensive energy plan. And then the final goal is an 80% reduction, again, from the comprehensive energy plan from our 1990 levels by 2050. There's also a provision there that the state will essentially get to what we sometimes call net zero emissions by potentially employing other mitigation strategies. So an example of that might be carbon sequestration that, and I don't pretend to be an expert on carbon sequestration. And in fact, you know, that's one of the important underlying values of this bill is that we really do get to rely on experts here to help us make these plans and figure out how to get there. But do you have any other questions about the goals? Or
no, that's great. So, and just to recap again, because again, the numbers are tough to get stuck in your head, 26% below 2005 levels within the next 5 years. So that has to happen by 2025. And then we have to get 40% below our 1990 emissions levels by 2030. And then we've got another 20 years to actually get 80% below our 1990 levels. So that would be by 2050. So there's sort of a short range and a long range plan here. And then we'll get more into the mechanisms for figuring out how to actually do that as we go through the show. But I want to make sure that Representative Loeffler, we get your perspective in here. You voted against the bill. If you just had to say, you know, constituents, here's my main reason why I don't think this is the right piece of legislation. What is it?
Yeah, so I would say that my biggest source of opposition to this bill lies in the premise, not actually with the lawsuit or some of the governor's concerns, but it's actually with the premise of outsourcing legislative work and authority. In 688, the proposed climate council of 23 people has 8 representing the executive branch. And that holds, the council not only holds policymaking authority, but enacting authority. So if you compare that to clean water, where we asked a board to come with a plan for the legislature to enact, there's no real checks and balances in this bill, and that makes me very uncomfortable, particularly with a great example of how a board can run amok looking just at 2 years ago with the State Board of Education and Act 46. It's absolutely, in my opinion, within the power of the legislature to do this work and not farm it out. And I don't understand how people are comfortable abdicating really our constitutional duty and handing that over to the executive branch and problematic boards and councils. And at the end of the day, it's bad governance. I absolutely agree that we have to address our changing climate.
And do you agree with the goals that are actually set out, this 26% below 2005 levels by 2025, et cetera, et cetera?
I have a lot of concerns for the reality of reaching the 26% below by 2005, but I was excited to see the governor commit to the Climate Alliance when we pulled out of the Paris Accord federally. And I'm excited to continue working on supporting legislation that addresses our changing climate. But you can oppose bad bills and still support good ideas.
Right.
And
so it sounds
kind of
like
where I stand.
Yeah, your opposition is not sort of philosophical, but logistical and really based on how these goals are implemented. That's your problem with this bill?
My problem with the bill is it farms out the work that the legislature should be doing, and it kind of abdicates that responsibility. If the council puts forward a proposal for reductions that Vermonters are uncomfortable with, the council's not elected. They're not accountable. I think if the legislature really wants this, the onus should be on the legislature. We should be the ones making these big decisions and the ones accountable for Vermonters like or dislike of the measures that we take to reach these goals.
Let's talk to some of our listeners here because I think they will help us get into some of the other questions that our lawmaker guests can help us discuss as we think about, you know, what these goals actually mean. And then, you know, I know it's not actually laid out explicitly in the bill, but what's it going to take to get to these goals? I mean, are we thinking about every Vermonter driving an electric vehicle? What does it mean for our power supplies? What does it mean for all of the ways that we currently think about emissions and the way we live when it comes to climate change? If you have a question, you can give us a call. Our number is 1-800-639-2211. That's 1-800-639-2211. You can also post your comments on the VPR Facebook page or send an email to vermontedition@vpr.org. Let's go to John, who's calling in from Stratford. Hi, John. Go right ahead.
Hey, thanks so much. I share the concerns, too, about that the representative just made about not going through the proper legislative process where people take responsibility for their decisions and have to weigh checks and balances. And this is for an issue, a global issue, that we're trying to solve on a statewide basis. And in some ways, unless you have the ability to carefully weigh the options, it's similar to trying to do single-payer health simply as a statewide basis. These are national and international problems. And the fact is we have the opportunity to address them with an election coming up on a national basis, and a statewide thing is just the wrong legislative and practical way to go about it.
So, John, your primary objection here is you think that taking a statewide approach to a global issue is the wrong way to tackle it, and then you also don't like the fact that lawmakers haven't put in sort of the delineated exactly how to do this at the legislative level. Do I have that right?
Yeah, it's almost like saying, you know, you're not having the responsibility to look at it and vote on the actions that are going to need to be taken. It's an end round around the legislature and around accountability. And that's just not good governance, and that doesn't lead to good results. And this is a very flawed bill, and the governor would be right to veto it.
Well, John, thank you for your perspective. I appreciate that. How would you address John's concerns both at the state level and this idea that, you know, this is a global issue that needs a global solution, and we are sort of fiddling around the edges by coming up with a statewide approach to something that is so much larger than anything Vermont can tackle? Representative Colburn.
Sure. I mean, first, I'd love to address this perception that the legislature is somehow abdicating responsibility here. There's actually, in what we sometimes call a citizen legislature, so much precedent for the legislature tasking agencies and state government to go through a rulemaking process and move things forward to task boards and commissions with coming up with policy that will enact. I think of my own work on the Judiciary Committee, where rather than enact a detailed, fair and impartial policing policy, which I think is an interesting example because it's both very timely and increasingly quite a litigious piece of potentially part of our state government and policy, we've entrusted the Criminal Justice Training Council to enact that policy, to come up with the model policy. But we continue to have a discussion year after year in my committee about the role of the legislature and continuing to shape that work and direction. And that opportunity certainly exists. There's no appropriations can move forward without the legislature. There's a very codified rulemaking process set up here that the legislature's committee, LCAR committee, will have, and the public will have significant input to. The legislature can use its authority to negate a rule. So the idea that the legislature, I mean, I went through the bill and a lot of material preparing for this, and we could actually spend the entire hour here, I think, just talking about all of the checks and balances that are here for the legislature as this plan moves forward. You know, the council reports the plan to the legislature again and again. We've heard from both our Attorney General and our Office of Legislative counsel that this is not an abdication of the legislature's responsibility, that there's no constitutional issues with how this is moving forward, and that in fact voting on the plan as a full legislative body might actually raise some issues around the separation of powers issue once ANR has been charged with moving forward with the rulemaking process. So I'm just not on the same page with Representative Leffler and the previous caller on that, with all deference. And then just on the question of the global issue, a global issue is one that requires all players to come to the table. And for example, with the commitment that we made to remain in, to be a part of the Climate Alliance, we've joined a coalition of people who said we're going to take action on this as part of a global strategy. And I think that that requires that we do, in fact, take action. When you look at all of the players in that alliance together, we actually are talking about a significant collective amount of global emissions. And so, you know, the idea that Vermont should somehow be immune from action in a global solution is one I can't quite wrap my head around.
Well, lots of Vermonters want to wrap their heads around this issue, have questions, have thoughts, have reactions to this idea of climate change legislation and the Global Warming Solutions Act, which would require these emissions reductions and sort of put into law a way for Vermonters to make sure that the state stays on track with these targets, that they are really actually more than just targets. They are lawfully necessary targets to meet. Linda in Norwich says this act is legislation that will institute planning for an emergency, the climate crisis. The scientific warnings about the impact of the climate crisis make clear that we have and will continue to have one emergency after another. Vermont is lucky this summer compared to the U.S. West. We have only, and she puts an exclamation mark in parentheses, the COVID pandemic and a moderate drought. But if we learn anything from the pandemic, it should be that we need to be ready for more. And this act will require planning and implementation. It is responsible and necessary. I applaud the legislature for passing it. And if Governor Scott vetoes it, I encourage them to override his veto. On the other hand, Tom tweets, this bill was passed in a lame duck COVID-19 emergency session with very little public debate. This should be withdrawn and voted on after the November election. We're talking about what's in the bill, these emissions targets, and also how the bill is set up. The bill doesn't actually spell out how the state is supposed to meet these targets, but it creates a climate council that includes people like the governor, secretary of administration, has state government officials, and representation from a lot of different sectors, including citizens, including manufacturing, including those who think about environmental advocacy. And then it's up to the Agency of Natural Resources to adopt new rules to regulate these greenhouse gas emissions and pollutants the following year. So lots to talk through about what this entails. We know from the governor, he has said he doesn't really like the way this bill is laid out. He has not officially said whether or not he's going to veto it. But at a press conference last week, he did say he didn't see a lot of solutions in the Global Warming Solutions Act, which I think rankled a lot of lawmakers who very strongly support this legislation and maybe bolstered the feelings of those who don't. We're talking with two of those people, one who supports it, one who doesn't, Representative Felicia Leffler, a Republican from Enosburg Falls, who voted against the bill, and Representative Selena Colburn, a progressive from Burlington, who's one of the bill's sponsors. Iris wrote in to say, I'm a student at Essex High School and a member of Youth Lobby. I just want to voice how incredibly important this legislation is and how much of a difference it will make for the futures of my peers and me. Our futures are in the hands of the legislators right now, and making the right choice, especially on this bill, can really make a difference to what our futures look like. We also got a note from Will in Hinesburg who says, the legislature has passed the buck on climate change to another task force, which will make recommendations that the legislature doesn't have the courage to enact itself. We need to tax the bad to invest in the good. Pass a carbon tax before you squander your supermajorities. And let's get some calls in here as well. Merlin is calling in from Lisbon, New Hampshire. Hi, Merlin. You've got a perspective on the Vermont bill. Are you a New Hampshire voter or a Vermont voter? Or what's your thought?
I'm a New Hampshire voter, but being close to the line, and I get better reception from your sister station in New Hampshire. So that's one of the reasons I'm on. This is getting ridiculous. We should waste anything but time in trying to come up with a comprehensive plan. And the only thing I hear about just about wherever I go is how much it's going to cost. If you happen to be a COPD fourth stage patient, you don't have to answer that question, because when you can't breathe, nothing else matters. And here we are talking about what kind of wallpaper is on the bark of the tree that's about to hit us in the head. So, having said that, I will throw down the gauntlet and say to the listeners, if the environment means that much to you, go your own way, pick up a rake, and do something. Make it the biggest prayer you've ever done, because if we don't do this on a one-on-one basis, we're sunk.
Well, Merlin, I appreciate that perspective and hear you on it, and don't negate what you're saying, but also wonder about, you know, at what point are these broader governmental solutions needed or business sector solutions needed, which often come with government action to address things like the way our power supply works, so to address things like the ability for those who do not have a lot of disposable income to buy more energy efficient vehicles? And is that something that we have to take on as a state, as a country, and as a globe, as we think about these? And clearly we do, and clearly those actions are being taken. And I also take Merlin's point that individual responsibility is paramount as well. But let's get some other thoughts in here as we go through this. James is calling in from Middlebury. Hi, James.
Hi. I could concede that Vermont didn't create this problem and doesn't have the power by itself to make much of a dent in it, countrywide, that is, let alone the world. I vehemently disagree with Representative Loeffler that the legislature is, quote unquote, farming out the solution to the courts. Vermont has been trying for almost 60 years to, quote unquote, save agriculture and protect the lake, and it has done neither. If somebody will sue the state for on the data and look at the results, the state has spent 60 years and about $3 billion trying to meet our clean water standards and has failed to do it.
Yeah, James, I hear the passion in your voice. I appreciate your call. Appreciate your perspective. Let me get one more question in here before we return to our guests. Marcia is calling in from Barrie. Hi, Marcia. What are your thoughts?
Hi, Jane. Thank you, and thanks to everybody. First of all, I'm glad that it's taken out of the legislators' hands, because they're more concerned with getting reelected than they are with dealing with the problem, and they've kicked the can down the road for years, and nothing has happened. And my question is in regards to the council. Is this a similar thing to the Green Mountain Care Board that sets the rates and policies for hospitals and health care? And if so, I think there ought to be a lot more representation from different kinds of consumers.
Yeah, Marcia, thank you very much for your call and your perspective. And again, there's this 23-member climate council that will be working on how to actually meet these emissions targets. And let me actually turn to you, Representative Loeffler. Who is on that panel and who do you think should be on it? Should this go through, and should it even survive a veto, which could come from the governor? Who should be on that panel?
So the panel is currently made up of 8 members of the administration. Most of those, let me grab it here, are secretaries that represent kind of the sectors that we're going to be impacting. So we have Secretary of Administration, Secretary of Natural Resources, Secretary of Agriculture, Secretary of Commerce and Community Development, Secretary of Human Services, Secretary of Transportation. We've also got the Commissioner of Public Safety, Commissioner of Public Service. And then we have 8 members chosen by the speaker that have to fall into specific areas of expertise or representation, and then seven that are chosen by the Committee on Committees. So as far as the members that make up the council, as I previously voiced, we're giving 8 seats to the executive branch for something that should be handled by the legislative, and then picked by the speaker but not required to be legislators are 8 more that might have some great expertise on climate change and initiatives and ideas to add to that plan that they're required to come up with. But they're not required to have really any depth of expertise. It's just one member to represent distribution utilities, one member to represent rural communities. So as far as the council is made up, I think that this bill made the effort in some regards to represent kind of the duality of Vermont in that rural and urban setting, and think about who ought to be included. But they missed the biggest point, that the legislature already has representatives that represent the duality of the rural and urban communities. The legislature already has pockets of expertise from being a citizen legislature. And we have just an absolute wealth of experience and ideas and advice that come from our agency partners and the administration, as well as from the public in any testimony and conversations that we have around this issue. So is the council made up of the right people? I don't think there should be a council. I firmly stand
before
that this is legislative
work. Before we come back
to
Representative Selena Colburn and Representative Felicia Loeffler, let's talk for a few minutes with Kevin Miller. Kevin covers politics and environmental issues for the Portland Press Herald in Maine and can talk us through a little bit of what Maine has been doing on climate change legislation, including one piece of legislation, Kevin, that is kind of similar, the Act to Promote Clean Energy Jobs and to Establish the Maine Climate Council, which, like Vermont, and like this legislation, which may pass here, has established a climate council whose charge it is to figure out how to get emissions targets down significantly by pretty much the same amount by 2050, rather, as Vermont would. But Maine has also enacted a couple other pieces of legislation. And thanks for being here, Kevin. Can you talk us through exactly what Maine is doing?
Sure. Thanks. Thanks for having me on. Yeah, I was able to listen in on part of your conversation, and it's interesting. There's definitely some clear similarities in the ways the states are trying to go about doing these things. Yeah, you're right. So when our governor, Janet Mills, was elected back in 2018, she had made climate change one of the top priorities of her campaign. She's a Democrat, and she quickly came in, and within a month or two, she announced these pretty ambitious goals for reducing emissions levels. Similar to what I think I saw in the Vermont bill, you know, reducing greenhouse gas emissions levels by, I think, 45% below 1990 levels by 2030, then going to 80% by 2050.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it looks but like also, it's just that 2025 number that is missing from Maine's compared to Vermont.
Yeah, yeah, and she also set a goal of sourcing 80% of our electricity here in Maine from renewable sources by 2030, and then 100% renewable by 2050. Mm. So, you know, and these are obviously pretty ambitious goals. So she set up a Maine Climate Council, similar to what you guys are talking about there. And they've been working on that for the past a little over a year now, trying to figure out ways to come up with solutions to actually achieve these goals.
Yeah, and Maine in 2019 also passed this changes to the renewable portfolio standard, right? So to try to achieve this 80% renewable energy by 2030 and 100% by 2050, which, as you mentioned, is something a little bit different. And then working on how to actually get to the power, you know, it looks like it's maybe a little bit more involved than what Vermont has passed. What's the general reaction been from voters and constituents in Maine to this legislation?
It seems like it's been overwhelmingly positive from what I've seen. I mean, they haven't the Maine Climate Council. Like I said, they started meeting, I believe, in September, June of last year was their first meeting. Actually, it was September, and then of course we hit the COVID pandemic, so they moved to more virtual meetings. But they're Their charge is to come up with a report to the governor and to the legislature by the end of this year. I'm not sure if they're going to meet that target. I know they're still trying to, but that report's supposed to outline some of the strategies for achieving these targets. You know, a lot of these meetings have been held online because of COVID. So, you know, the public can watch and can participate, but haven't really seen a lot of opposition to what they've been doing. And the bill passed the legislature with broad bipartisan support. So there really hasn't been very much controversy up here in Maine over these goals.
Is there a mechanism to that could trigger lawsuits or trigger some kind of accountability for the state if it doesn't meet these targets in the same way that Vermont has this mechanism?
Yeah, that was interesting. I don't remember. I looked back through the bill as I was listening to your conversation, and I don't see any mechanisms for lawsuits to make sure the state is holding is meeting these goals. So that definitely seems to be a difference between what Maine and Vermont is contemplating doing. The Maine Climate Council, after they're done with this. With their work and coming up with recommendations, they're supposed to report back to the legislature and to the governor every 2 years to say how they're making progress, whether the state's making progress on meeting these goals. But I don't believe that there is a lawsuit, you know, provision in there.
You know, it's interesting. You said there you haven't seen a lot of opposition to this among Mainers, and it had broad bipartisan support when it passed. But we're so early in this process, and similarly, Vermont, you know, is a little bit earlier even, although, you know, all of our regional states have had these energy plans in place for a while. But I wonder if you think, Kevin, that maybe we're early enough that it doesn't hurt yet. You know, there's not so much change yet that people are really feeling it either in the sector where they work or in, you know, what they have to pay one way or another, or in the vehicle that they drive and the choices that they sort of are steered towards. So do you think there may be more tension as Maine moves through this process, and certainly then as Vermont may do it as well?
Yeah, absolutely. And I shouldn't overlook that there were definitely concerns that have been raised by sectors of the industry and the power generation sector about the meeting some of these goals. So I don't want to say that there's not, you know, concern about what will be required to do to achieve these goals. But I think you're absolutely right. Right now, this is just a task force that's coming up with recommendations. But ultimately, it's going to come down to the legislature and the state, you know, departments to implement these and put in place the rules to do it. And that's where, you know, the rubber is going to meet the road. And, you know, we had a very short-lived debate last year earlier this year in the Maine legislature about a potential, you know, carbon tax. And that bill was quickly shot down. So that gives you an indication, you know, and that would have imposed a fee on some of the suppliers of, you know, heating oil and gasoline. And Republicans really went after that bill, and that bill was shut down very quickly. So, like I said, that gives you an indication of it's going to be hard to get to some of these emissions targets, because then you're going to have to make difficult decisions and people are going to have to make sacrifices.
Yeah. Wow. Well, it'll be interesting to see in Maine, and certainly interesting to see around our region as so many of our states are grappling with this. Kevin, thank you very much for waiting on the line and for talking us through what's happening in Maine. I appreciate it.
Oh, sure. Thanks for having me. Good luck with everything.
Yeah, thanks. You too. Kevin Miller covers politics and environmental issues for the Portland Press Herald. And, you know, that's a good point to come back to you, Representative Colburn, on, because, you know, Kevin was talking about, so this bill passes, but now what? You know, then we have to actually do the things that may be more painful to actually meet those emissions reductions. And whether or not the lawsuit mechanism is in there to actually push action by the legislature, which is, you know, Representative Loeffler, what you've also been talking about, the role of the legislature here. If we are to meet these goals, we're going to have to take action on individual levels and on the statewide level. So, Representative Colburn, what do you see as the steps we need to take, whether it's a carbon tax, whether it's added incentives for electric vehicles, even for families who are buying a 10-year-old vehicle who don't have a lot of expendable income? You know, what do we actually do to meet these targets?
A great question. And I think actually, you know, this goes to the underlying need for the bill, I think, because Vermont has done incredible work in the legislature and outside of the legislature to come up with plans for getting to these goals. Our comprehensive energy plan does that. The Energy Action Network has actually taken the comprehensive energy plan and done the math on, okay, how many electric vehicles would we need to put on the road? How much weatherization? All of these, you know, approaches that actually save Vermonters money and contribute to economic development would foster new jobs in our economy. And the roadmap is kind of there. The governor himself had, somewhat ironically, a 21-member climate council that came forward with 53 recommendations. There's some great stuff there. The problem is he's not moving them forward. So we are not starting from scratch here. You know, anything like a carbon pricing model would absolutely require legislative approval. And there are a lot of solutions already on the that have been on the table for years and years that really are direct, you know, would increase resiliency for Vermonters, would be a boon to our economy. The bill has calls for substantive work on the issue of resiliency, which I think is so important, and also calls for what we're calling a just transition. So any solution that comes forward really has to take into account how rural Vermonters, how low-income Vermonters, how folks who are going to be the most impacted by the effects of climate change can be assisted in the transition. So, you know, I can't tell you the way we're going to do it is X, Y, and Z, but I can tell you that so many pieces of the puzzle, so much good work has already been done. The issue is we're not moving forward the solutions. And this is what the bill does. It really puts us on a course to do that.
Well, and Representative Loeffler, if what you're saying is, you know, the legislature needs to take the action that voters have put legislators in place to do, you know, in some ways, wouldn't this bill force you to take action down the road, even if it doesn't explicitly say right now what all of that action is?
In some ways, I think that that's an accurate statement. I think it comes back around to we've had the Clean Water Board bring solutions to the legislature. The legislature has enacted them. That's fine. It sounded like there was something to that effect with the main legislation, if I understood correctly, that their plan had to go back to their legislature. I think that we have, from Governor Scott's council, we have 50-some-odd ideas to work with. We could have put those in a bill and worked out a timeline for enacting those. But we didn't.
But if these standards are in place, couldn't some of those things still go through legislative action in the future, just with the understanding that these targets have to be met and that in some cases there is the threat of legal action, but that, you know, all of those things that you're talking about could still happen, couldn't they?
Absolutely. And if they can still happen through the legislature, why would we give the authority to a council to enact them?
Yeah, got your point. And let's let's take another a couple of points here from listeners who have some logistical questions. Drew wonders, well, did the legislature pass this with a veto-proof majority? Representative Colburn, is this likely to go into law one way or another?
I think so. We had, you know, a strong veto-proof vote both on the underlying bill and on the funding for the bill last week. And I think, you know, what I've heard again and again from Vermonters is that they have our backs on this, and this is really important to them. This is really in a lot of ways about us playing catch up. We have the highest emissions per capita in New England. We are the only, you know, none of our neighboring states have seen emissions since 1990 levels, whereas Vermont has seen a 13% increase. Sorry, none of our neighboring states have seen an increase. Vermont has seen a 13% increase. So what I've heard loud and clear from my constituents, including, you know, seventh graders who are just fearless going into rooms with adults and telling me, like, the time is now. There is incredible urgency behind this issue. And I hope the governor hears the voice of Vermonters and the voice of the legislature on this issue.
Let me see if I can squeeze one more call in here from Peter in Brattleboro. Peter, hi. Can you make it quick? I want to get to your question, though.
Very briefly. My feeling is that a lot of people who are in positions to make these big decisions about things like emissions don't really have a line on the amount of the population that really can't afford to upgrade their cars. I have a 2005 Passat that is in process of dying, and I can't afford a new car. I can afford...
Peter, I'm going to stop you there because I hear what you're saying, and I appreciate your personal perspective on this. And the VPR Vermont PBS poll that we had a while ago said so many Vermonters can't even afford an unexpected $1,000 expense. So I know you I'm not giving you much time, Representative Colburn, but this is going to hurt people who need to make choices but don't have a lot of money. Everything does. So how do you protect them?
I think we protect them by the really important provisions in this bill that I mentioned earlier about making sure that low-income Vermonters, rural Vermonters, have the support and the resources that they need. We know that there is the possibility of increasing federal stimulus money in the coming year by doing this planning. In this bill, we know how to put that money to good use to help the people who need it to make this transition.
Well, there's going to be a lot of decisions still to come, including whether the governor vetoes this bill or not. I want to thank our guests today. Representative Felicia Loeffler is a Republican from Enosburg Falls. Thank you very much for being on the program.
Thank you so much for having me.
And Representative Selena Colburn is a progressive from Burlington, who's one of the sponsors of the Global Warming Solutions Act. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Jane, for your great questions and those of listeners.